Daniel chapter 6. That's where we'll get all of our text. This lesson is one that I taught in part, at least in one form, a couple of years ago. And it was on my heart as I was studying what I wanted to teach tonight. And it was really kind of confirmed on Sunday when Brother Ken opened up to the book of Daniel, and kind of his message is overlapping very heavily with what I've got tonight, but it's certainly not a carbon copy, so hopefully there'll be additional information in it for us here. And is everybody happy to be here? Brother Mike was catching a little glimpse of the grace that God's shown all of us. And once you start getting a feeling of that grace, it's hard to turn loose of. You know, it's hard to really fathom. If we could ever just get a real glimpse of what God's done for us, it'll blow our minds. So I'll tell you, kind of the theme of this message is we're not called to be great, but we're called to be obedient. God doesn't expect a whole lot out of us. In the terms of greatness, but he does expect obedience. I'll tell you, it feels like the season's changing a little bit. I don't know about you guys, but maybe it's starting to get a little bit close to fall. I think actually September 1st was the end of summer. Did y'all know that? That's the official end of summer, and it's time to get in. Is there some kind of can't wear a Hawaii after? Is that labor? Is that right? Does anybody know that one? Oh, well, there's some people breaking the rule in here, but I won't point you out. But when I think about seasons of life, and I really feel in a lot of ways that I'm starting to feel the seasons change in my life. And I'm not sure if it's because, like many of you, our youngest child just went off to college. That was, you know, that was a change. That's a season. Or maybe it's because a couple months I'll be 50 years old. Yeah, that's a big number, isn't it? That's like, I mean, I know there's bigger numbers, but I'm just saying that's you just walk with me. But that's like a place in there's actually, you can get discounts after that age, So there's. I mean, there's something to it, Brother Jamie. I look at you because you're right there, buddy. How'd that happen? I don't either. I don't know if it's because I've been, in my job for 25 years or so, most of it at the same company, same type work. And I was thinking the other day, and I don't want this to sound arrogant, but you've been in a place for a couple of decades. You know a lot of people, and there are people all over the country in our industry that, they know my name. And, I could really get puffed up on that if I wanted to. But believe me, I'm not. Because I've noticed that when people retire, I forget their names within 2 years. Any of y'all ever seen that or noticed that? So I'm pretty sure I'm no different than the people that I'm forgetting. Within 2 or 3 years, all those folks that know who I am, they're not going to know me. They're not going to remember, who's that guy, the annoying one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember him. But we're all that way, and no matter what we build up in our lives, whether, everybody in Bowden, Carrollton, Douglasville, Heflin, whether they know your name or not, at the end of the day, whatever level of greatness that is, it pales in comparison to what God would see in us with just being obedient. Our security doesn't come from our little earthly empires. It comes from what God has for us. Our security won't come from the wealth that you can build, or the position that you can build, or the reputation that you can build. But it'll come from what God has to protect us. So I'll say God may prosper the obedient. He probably will. If we're obedient to God's rules, there will likely be prosperity involved. But if our blessings or our self-reliance calls us to pull back from counting on God, then we're on extremely dangerous ground, extremely dangerous territory. The moment we become self-reliant in our minds or in our hearts, we're in a very dangerous place. Because God can't bless that. God can't allow that in His children. God can't, He can't protect that. Or He has to correct that. There's a chastening involved to God's children. And we have to really guard our hearts that we don't become self-reliant. So tonight in Daniel chapter 6, if you'll go to verse 1, I want to look at the life of Daniel. And he demonstrated some really tremendous characteristics through his life. He had a strength in his life that I would love to have. And he had a consistency in his life that I would love to have. One of the things I've struggled with through my life is consistency. I've found that if you can be consistent on something, you can make progress on something. If you are in and out, up and down, it's hard to make progress that way. But consistency is a pretty powerful concept. So Daniel chapter 6, verse 1, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these three princes, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto him, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and the princes, catch this, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Daniel was in a special place. He had a special position on this earth. He was second to the king, and everybody reported to him except the king. We know the story, and we're not going to get into it tonight, how the other princes conspired against him, and he ended up in the lion's den when they convinced Darius to declare a decree that focused on him and denying prayer. And we know that Daniel refused to not pray to his God. He refused to comply with the decree, and he ended up in the lion's den. But I want to look a little deeper into Daniel's life. How is it that he was so strong? He actually survived multiple kings until Darius reigned. He made it through six kings leading up to Darius. How many bosses have you made it through in your careers or in your life? And I find it interesting that Daniel was a stable force in this land. And if you read through the kings that came and went, there was some craziness right there. And I'm sure all the people said, well, the king might be crazy, but we know Daniel's there to add stability, and Daniel's there to add some common sense, or Daniel's there to add influence to get the right thing done. I think Daniel had great influence, and God had him in that special place for a reason. So how was Daniel so strong? How did he have the strength to stand for his God? How did he have the strength to trust so deeply, to influence so greatly, or to be used so purely? So I want to take you back, and I'll just do this. We won't go to the verses because it's quite wordy. But I want to take you back to the book of Daniel chapter 1. And let's think about when Daniel first came on the pages of the Bible. Okay, so the first king that Daniel was involved in, Nebuchadnezzar, he was the king of Babylon, and he seized Jerusalem. He took them over. And he sent his eunuch to take the best of the children of Israel. Daniel and three of his boys, three other boys taken that were just like him. Matter of fact, we heard about on Sunday. Who was it? It was Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These were the children that were taken. Among the children, these four were taken by Nebuchadnezzar out of their families, out of their homes, to go serve in the king's court. Daniel had his first test when he was first introduced into the king's control. And the first test he had was just as difficult as the lion's den. I mean, we all hear about the lion's den. We learn about that in Sunday school, and we remember that. But this first test was just as difficult and took just as much faith. The king told the eunuch to feed these men from his table meat and wine so they'd look fatter and stronger than the other boys. He was trying to set them apart to be special. Daniel refused because that would have defiled his beliefs, defiled himself, and he convinced the eunuch to feed the other kids from the king's table. You feed everybody else for 10 days and let me eat the food that I'm allowed to eat, which was really what he called pulse. And that's food that's grown from a seed. It's like being a vegetarian. So it doesn't make sense that a meat eater from a king's table, which is probably all the fatty foods and all the rich foods, wouldn't be stronger and fatter than someone eating vegetables. So after 10 days, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were healthier and fatter than all the rest. It was the first proof that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God was stronger than the world. So Daniel started, as we said, as a captured child, and he went on to serve in the king's kingdom. He was elevated to the height of all the princes, above all the princes and all the presidents back in Daniel 6:3. And it says there that it's because an excellent spirit was in him. The lion's den that Daniel experienced didn't come from a moment of belief. It came from a lifetime of consistency. He had the strength to go into the lion's den not worried because he was consistent from the very beginning with God's principles and through his life, and he built that strength up over time. I think Brother Ken said it this Sunday, it's not in the moment of temptation that we need to make our decisions. It's years and months and weeks in advance of the temptation where we decide there are lines that we will not cross. There are things that we will not do. There are pieces of our lives that we will not give up. It's early on when the decision is made because every single one of us can get weak enough to make the wrong decision. You get the right amount of stress. You get the right amount of fatigue. You get the right amount of exhaustion and the right amount of pressure. We can all make the wrong decision in a moment. We have to fix our minds early and in our lives to make sure that the right thing comes out in the moment of temptation. We have to realize that our strength comes from a quiet consistency in everyday life, just like Daniel demonstrated here. I shared this before, but several years ago, Jennifer and I built a house kind of back in the woods, and it's pretty far off the road. You know, there was really nothing there except for trees and underbrush and so forth. So we had to clear out the area. And I guess probably a few decades ago, it might have been a pasture because there was barbed wire. I find barbed wire all the time. So if you want to take a metal detector and go over my property, you'll find plenty of barbed wire, and I'm sure it will frustrate you deeply. But it's there. So, but it must have been several decades because there's some really large trees and some underbrush. And when I first got there, there was this cane. I don't know, it's like a little skinny cane that grows in wet areas, and it was just as thick as it could be. And you could walk through it, but it was a good, it was pretty much above your head. Well, I started clearing that out because it was intrusive and it wasn't pretty. So, I spent the first year kind of cutting it down, and I finally got to a point to where I had the cane under control, and then I noticed, well, there's briars wrapped around everything. I got to get into these briars, and I would cut briars, and I would drag them into piles and burn them like brush. There were so many briars that needed to be dealt with. Well, I went from cutting the cane from this high to, as soon as it would sprout up, I'd hit it with a weed eater, and it got easier year after year, and the briars got easier year after year because I'd do the same to them. Then I noticed after about 3 years, we just got these beautiful ferns growing up everywhere where all that stuff used to be. And I think about that, you know, I didn't go plant any ferns. We didn't have any fern seeds, if that's how you get ferns. I don't really know how that works. Does anybody know? I don't know how you grow a fern. But there were ferns, now there are ferns everywhere. And I thought, you know, that's desirable. I like ferns, they're pretty. And in our lives, it's kind of the same way. There are things that are always trying to sprout up in our hearts and in our minds. And there's maintenance involved in chopping those things down and cutting those things down. If we can just be consistent, just like Daniel was through his life, if we can just be consistent and keep those things beat down, we probably can't do it all in a day. We probably can't do it all in a week. It may take a couple of decades to do it all. But eventually, if you get the bad stuff beat down, the good stuff has oxygen and room to grow in our lives. So I challenge all of us to try to live this way. If we can consistently focus like Daniel to push the defiling things out of our lives and not compromise day in and day out, year in and year out, we put ourselves in a place that God wants to and can bless us. And we become to ourselves and realize our lives have way more ferns than what we ever expected. It's a great thing to wake up and go, where'd all this good stuff come from? Where'd all these ferns come? Where'd all this plenty come from in our lives? That's a great place to be. So prosperity comes from daily habits and daily disciplines. It's so easy to get caught up in destructive and bad habits. There's a book out there called, let me make sure I get it right, The Power of the Habit. If any of you have a bad habit, I didn't look at anybody. My head just went that way. I wasn't looking at anybody. I'm looking above everyone. If anyone has a bad habit, I want to give you something here out of that book that just might help you. In the book it says, habits are made up of this. There's a trigger, there's an action, and there's a reward. A trigger, an action, a reward. Let me give you an example. I think most people would agree that smoking is a bad habit, okay? So, trigger is I'm stressed out. Action is I smoke a cigarette, I get the nicotine hit and the chemical, I don't know what all chemicals are in them nowadays, and I relax. Well, what if I get stressed out, I go for a walk, I get the dopamine hit and the endorphin hit from having exerted energy and blood flow and exercise, and I relax. So you can replace the action. You can't stop the trigger, but you can replace the action and get a different result. Think about that thing that you're struggling with, if you are struggling with something. Whether it's chocolate, I don't want to start naming things because it'll get personal up in here. But whatever that thing, there's nothing wrong with chocolate, by the way. I don't know where that came from. But whatever that thing is, when you trigger, have a plan of action. I know what I'm going to do when I want this thing or I want that thing. I'm going to go take this action every time. And eventually, that becomes the habit. That becomes the thing that's craved. And it's the good action that's craved to get a better result. So, talking about this, you know, this stuff is real. It's not a fairy tale. God is real. God can change our lives. We have to make decisions every day in our hearts, whether or not we believe if God really has the power to change our lives and to affect our lives. It's a choice we're making. We have to decide. And even if we don't decide, we just decided. So we have to make a call. We have to make a stand. We have to take a position on God. We have to take a position on Jesus. And I've quoted this several times, but just to remind us, C.S. Lewis has a statement of, we have to decide if Jesus was one of three things. What was it? liar, lunatic, or Lord. He had to be one of them. He claimed to be the Son of God. He claimed to be of virgin birth. He was either lying, he was crazy, or it just might have been true. And you don't get to put him in a, he was a good teacher, or he was a good prophet, or he was a man of God, but not the Son of God. We don't get to put him in that box. And it's very difficult for the world to understand. And my next few statements could get me canceled in today's society. But I have to say, if we believe that Christianity is the way, we have to agree. We have to settle in our hearts that there is no other way. Because Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He said, I am the door. There is no other way to the Father except through me. We can't accept that word and also accept a word that would include other paths. There's a preacher I was listening to. He said, we have to decide if Christianity, if we believe it's the only way. He said, it's like, I'm going to use this flashlight. He said, it's like trying to convince someone that there's a such thing as a one-ended stick. You think about try to argue that this is a one-ended flashlight. You can't say Christianity is true, Christ is the Son of God, and Buddhism or Islam or fill in the blank is also okay and will get you to heaven. It's as ridiculous as saying this flashlight just has one end to it. Some things just can't coexist. And we like to make everything okay, and we like to make everything okay for everybody, and the world is becoming more and more accustomed to, if that's the way they believe, then that's their truth. It's not that simple. There are absolute truths. And we have to decide, just like Daniel decided, there's an absolute truth that my God is the God. And I'll eat vegetables and I'll be healthier because my God has the power to make me healthier. I'll be stronger because my God is the one that gives me my strength, not the things of this world. So you can't get away from the either-or logic when it comes to Jesus. Jesus is the only way. So if forced to make a decision about Christ, how will we live? How will we embrace His truths? Where will we get our strength? Daniel lived a life only concerned with God's view of him, not concerned with perceptions of others. Warning, this next part's going to get personal. So I still love y'all, and I hope y'all still love me after this is over, okay? But I'm going to move into some very shaky territory. I don't really have a social media account myself. And it's not because I'm anything. I'm just not interested. I just don't have interest. And I just, for whatever reason, I think it's got something to do with, I have no idea what it is. But regardless, I just never got on that bandwagon. But I am close enough to it and around it enough to know that a lot of the images and the lives that are portrayed on social media are not exactly a match for the reality of life. I was talking to someone the other day, and I said, yeah, that couple, I think they're going to get married. Well, if you look on Instagram, it looks like they're going to get married because everything is awesome. But every time I see them, they're arguing, so I don't know what that is. And I've also noticed that the people that we see face-to-face, when you see them on a post, a lot of times, I don't know what, I'm pretending I don't know. Is it called filters? What's a filter? We were watching a movie the other night, and this actress had gotten a lot of surgery. And, you know, you're thinking, what do they see when they look in the mirror? Is there like a psychological dysmorphia thing that's going on to where it looks like they're doing a good thing because they just keep going down that track of more and more surgery. It's like it's going to get better. Applying more filters doesn't make it look better. Okay, I'll just tell you. I'm just going to tell you the truth. Applying more filters doesn't make it look better. Things start to look fake. The point I'm trying to make here, rather than just get everybody stirred up, is sometimes we try to portray an image of ourselves that's not necessarily reality. And I'll give you an analogy. I can be walking outside and look up and see a bird flying. And if it's flying high enough, I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but a buzzard that's really just kind of soaring in the wind, high enough, it's a very graceful creature. Matter of fact, you could even say it's beautiful from that distance. What happens when it gets close to the ground and we can see what it's really all about? So I think maybe we should work on, maybe we should all work on what we really are and how we really appear to the people that are closest to us and to the people that we're impacting, rather than trying to create some distant image that isn't really real. Because every time the buzzard lands and we get up close to it, you see it eating the dead stuff on the road. You see it. You just see how ugly it is. So may we be people that live our lives in such a way that we'd honor God and, like Daniel, be found in an excellent spirit, that we choose God's way depending on His strength consistently, day in and day out. The results in our lives and in the lives of those around us will be much more blessed. And I'll tell you, we are much different than the buzzard. It is born a buzzard, and it will die a buzzard. It is born ugly, and it will die ugly. We have the opportunity to be born again. We don't have to die the way we entered this world. We get a chance to do different than the buzzard. We get a chance to transform. We get a chance to accept what's being offered to us, and we get a chance to be something that is actually great if we can conform to the image of Christ in our lives. And God is not looking for perfection in that area either. He's looking for obedience in that area. We can give obedience every day. We can give perfection no day. You'll never work up an ounce of perfection. So, to live obediently, Charles Stanley, y'all remember Charles Stanley when he's not on TV anymore. I don't know what he's doing now, but boy, he was great. He delivered a great message. So Charles Stanley says, "We are given light and truth from God, not to become more enlightened, not to have greater understanding or even be smarter, but that we may have a deeper obedience when God shows us something. It should deepen our obedience in Him." So it's not about becoming more enlightened. It's about becoming more obedient. So no matter what season we're in, whether we feel spiritually high or spiritually bankrupt, remember, I think Brother Jamie said this last Wednesday, if you're still breathing, God's not done. If you're still breathing, God's not done. Sometimes it feels like He's moved on. Sometimes it feels like He's moved on for me. Like maybe He's, you know, played out with me and He's just going to put His energy into somebody else. But I'm still here. And as long as I can be obedient, I think He can still use me. But let's just be honest. Sometimes it doesn't feel like you're on the list. Sometimes it doesn't feel great. But that's part of the journey, you know what? Seasons flow through our lives, and that's part of the deal. And God would expect us, I'm sure Daniel didn't feel like he was in a great place all the time either. But he was consistent, and he complied, and he did it day in and day out. So God's not looking for perfection in you. That'd be goofy because He knows perfection in you and I is impossible. But God's looking for obedience. Obedience is possible, and He can bless obedience. Thank you for your attention.